The following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and criminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents... Normal Show Live, Marijuana Nation. Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator, Radical Russ Belville.
Good afternoon, tokers and tokettes. It is Thursday, August 26, 2010, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for joining us for the next 120 minutes of news, talk, interviews, information, music, comedy, and more by, for, and about the cannabis community. We are broadcasting, or streaming, I guess it is technically called, from Rolla J Studios here in beautiful Potland, Oregon, the home of the 2010 Normal National Conference, September 9th through 11th. Also joining me in the studio, our engineer, Ganja John.
Hey, Russ, how you doing today?
I am doing fantastic. You've got a skunk hat, I see.
I did. I got a hat from Ralph yesterday.
Oh, very
at
nice.
At the cafe. Somebody gave it to him. He gave it to me. You
know, some skunks, some Cottonmouth Kings in the house.
That's how I roll. And
looking
then a
good.
Gigantic High Times poster.
Yeah, let's go to that. I want to talk about that just real briefly here. On camera three, we have got the gigantic reproduced cover of High Times magazine, which I can't tell what year it is.
April something. It doesn't say the year.
Yeah, April. Yeah, it doesn't say the year, but April cover from High Times back in the day, featuring Jack Herer, you know, the Emperor of Hemp, signed by many of the luminaries who were there at Seattle Hemp Fest.
And one of the crazies.
So that's there. It's being auctioned off for Normal at the Normal National Conference, and we get to hold on to it here in Portland until the conference happens. So
I got to admit, it looked great in my house on my mantle couple days. So.
Yeah, so really cool to have Jack looking over us like that. We are happy to be caretakers of that art for now. Also joining us from our virtual studio in Astoria, Oregon, my good friend and half sister, Cannabis Carrie. Hello, Carrie.
Oh, no.
We're missing Carrie. I wonder if she turned her microphone on.
She said she was experimenting with sound today.
She
experimented herself right on not having any sound.
I guess so. We'll let Carrie fix that while we move on. We're going to have all sorts of great stuff on today's show. It is Groovin' Thursday, so John Doe from John Doe Radio in Denver, Colorado, joins us, bringing us some great Groovin' Thursday music from The Literates. We'll be hearing their song at 20 after. At 30 past, we are going to be visiting with Cops Say Legalized Drugs. That is LEAP, a LEAP speaker, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, a man named Mackenzie Allen, who served as an undercover narcotics officer in South Central L.A., to talk about some tough duty there, and also a retired deputy sheriff from King County, Washington. So I'm sure we'll have all sorts of interesting perspective on the war on drugs. And then at 45 past, we're going to do another radical rant. We're going to take a look at the post I made that on the Stash blog that got a ton of hits, the Prop 19 word-for-word analysis. And I'm going to give you the insight of some of our commenters who've pointed out some really good and some really dumb things about Prop 19. Plus, the Toker Talk Radio in hour two, we'll take your calls. Until then, we'll be right back after this.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation. The the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, or NORML, invites you to our 39th Annual National Conference, Legalization, Just Say Now, Thursday, September 9th through Saturday, September 11th, 2010, at the Opulent Governor's Hotel in downtown Portland.
The war on drugs has been a poor film, and I think that we need to rethink it and formalize our marijuana laws.
Extend your visit through Sunday, September 12th, and you can also attend the free two-day Portland Hempstock, the largest outdoor cannabis and music festival in Oregon.
I inhaled frequently. That was the point.
Just Say Now. The NORML National Conference, September 9th through 11th in Portland, Oregon. Details available on the web at normal.org/conference or by calling 202-483-5500. Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's NORML News with Cannabis Carry.
Welcome back, everyone. Six after the hour, we are trying to get Cannabis Carrie on the line, but for some reason, the sound, she's hearing us, but we're not hearing her, so we're going to keep working on that. In the meantime, I want to deliver some of the news that's been breaking over here at our NORML Show live desks, and we've heard from some folks in the chat room, as well as folks on our Stash blog at stash.normal.org, who've told us that the charges against Barry Cooper, the cop busters of cop busters fame, have been dropped. The charges have been dropped on Barry Cooper. He was involved with the Odessa, Texas Police Department, which had accused him of filing false police reports. And it was part of what he does in Cop Busters. He does kind of sting operations on police officers. And in this case, they accused him of filing a false police report when his sting was trying to catch some officers in their corruption. But now the charges against Barry Cooper and his wife have been dropped, along with those against a third associate. So that is the news on Barry Cooper. I've always personally had kind of an interesting perspective on the whole Barry Cooper thing, because on the one hand, he's a former cop who worked narcotics, and he did a lot of bus, and he found he's found that the drug war is ineffective, and that the bus were meaningless and futile, and were just ruining good people's lives, and he changed his perspective, retired from the police force, and became a crusader fighting against the war on marijuana. So on that count, he's great. I love that he's doing that, and that he's pointing out how cops entrap people and how cops can lie to people and all the different ways that the corruption in police forces works in the war on drugs. That's all great stuff. Where I had my problems with Barry Cooper is when he started setting up these stings and calling the cops and basically filing false police reports. I don't take that lightly. It's, you know, like people that pull fire alarms, you know, for a kick, right? You are taking away the resource from its intended use for an unintended use. You know, the cops that are being called away for this false police report of Barry Cooper's might have been called away from some other task they might have been doing, some other crime that they might have been preventing. Now, I'm all for catching the corrupt cops in the act. And the idea of what he wants to do here is a good one. It's just I don't think it should be undertaken by civilians. This is something that we should be pressuring our governments to be doing, pressuring our officials to be doing, internal affairs to be doing. There are mechanisms by which the police themselves can be policed. It shouldn't be through filing false police reports at the citizen level. In other news, local news here in Oregon, the Oregon NORML World Famous Cannabis Cafe made an announcement just this week that they have created a new day pass system by which any Oregon medical marijuana card holder can come into the cafe for a flat $10 fee. Great news on that respect, because a lot of folks were a little reticent to join Oregon NORML and join the cafe before they would come into the cafe. They'd want to try it themselves and then see later if maybe that's something they wanted to join, if they wanted to join Oregon NORML. So now the group is having people, any Oregon card holder can get into the Oregon NORML World Famous Cannabis Cafe at 322 Southeast 82nd Avenue in Portland for just $10 per day. Now, If you would like to save money on that, if you would like to get in for just $5 a day, they are offering now the $5 the $5 cover charge for members of Oregon Normal without any sort of cafe membership involved. So if you spend your $35 to join Oregon Normal for the year, for the rest of that year, you're getting into the cafe for just $5. It's an amazing deal. You save a whole lot of money if you join Oregon Normal, and then you help Oregon Normal grow to fight marijuana prohibition. So check it out. The website is ornormal.org, O-R-N-O-R-M-L.org, or you can check out usacannabiscafe.org. Couple updates on the Facebook story that we covered yesterday. Of course, Facebook had taken an ad from the Just Say Now Coalition, which includes Students for Sensible Drug Policy, as well as Fire Dog Lake, the influential liberal blog. Their Just Say Now legalization campaign featured an ad containing a marijuana leaf picture inside of a little cartoon balloon saying Just Say Now legalization and so forth. Facebook had allowed the ad to appear for about 3 weeks and generated lots and lots of attention and hits. And then suddenly Facebook reversed their decision and decided to ban the ad, claiming that the marijuana leaf was associated with smoking products and therefore could not be displayed. Well, the latest news is that Google has decided to run these ads. In a nutshell, basically Google has said that, let's see, I get to the point here. Google has said that they are okay with running the Just Say Now legalization ad because they have found that cannabis consumers are just as willing or even in some cases more willing to use the internet, and they don't want to miss out on that customer base. Very smart decision by Google. It's going to be very interesting to see how Facebook responds with this, you know, the search giant taking all of that advertising and all of that interest away from Facebook. But there is one good thing we can say about this censorship is it does create a lot of free earned media. It's a beautiful thing. This is the dumbest thing that people do when they try to censor a controversial point of view is by screaming about it, by bringing up censorship, by censoring it, you cause all the news stations to run the ad so that they can tell the story about how it's being censored. And people who wouldn't have been surfing the net and seen the little pot leaf ad on Facebook are now hearing about it and seeing it in newspapers and on TV and hearing people talking about it on the radio. So it's the best possible thing that could have happened as far as Fire Dog Lake and Students for Sensible Drug Policy goes. They're getting their ad in front of more people just because of the controversy Facebook has drummed up. So, in a sense, maybe it was a good thing what Facebook did there. Very interesting about that. Thanks. All right, we're going to check out more news here in the cannabis news. We're still trying to get Carrie up on the line, but unfortunately, we think we have some sort of technical problem at her end that we cannot cure. So we will go on with some more news from Toke of the Town, Steve Elliott's excellent blog that you should check out at tokeofthetown.com. He's got a story up here about the LA dispensary system, and this is something we've been covering for a while on Normal Show Live. The LA City Council was for the longest time dragging their feet in producing any sort of regulations for dispensaries. The number of dispensaries in LA had grown to some estimates as high as 1,000, but more realistic estimates were below 700. Regardless, lots, hundreds and hundreds of dispensaries serving the patients of the Los Angeles basin. Well, Los Angeles city officials announced Wednesday that only 41 medical marijuana dispensaries are eligible to stay in business under the city's restrictive ordinance. The number is so low that the city will suspend the process of narrowing the number of shops and ask a judge to rule that is legal. This is reported in the Los Angeles Times. The announcement means that at least 129 of the dispensaries that had been allowed to remain open under the previous moratorium will now be forced to close. That's right. We went from hundreds of marijuana dispensaries serving the market to just 170-something. And then now we're going to go from those 170-something, we're going to close 129 of those to leave just 41. More concentration of the market. And it's not as if the people that had been shopping at the hundreds of dispensaries up to this point are going to stop using their medicine. In fact, more and more people are getting their Prop 215 recommendations, and we're concentrating that business in just 41 locations. And the fear I have about this, having already seen the dispensaries in Northern California, in Sacramento, Canacare, in South Lake Tahoe, and a few other places in Northern California that have vehemently come out against Prop 19, I can see this concentration of power in Los Angeles leading to more of these dispensaries against legalization. Why wouldn't you? If you're a dispensary owner, if you're a business owner, and your competition just got cut from hundreds of competitors to just 40 competitors, would you support a measure that then reopens the market back up to hundreds of competitors? No, things are looking pretty good for you. You've got a captive market of people willing to pay $300 an ounce for your medicine. Why would you want to allow them to grow their own 5x5 and not have to go through the trouble of getting a doctor's recommendation? Yes, this concentration of power in the dispensaries in Los Angeles is only going to bode ill for legalization overall. We got a story coming out of Montana. A legislative panel in Montana decided this week to draft a bill tightening Montana's medical marijuana program in time for the 2011 legislature. Medical marijuana patients and advocates are warning that the proposal contains unnecessary restrictions on patients and patient supporters, like growers and caretakers and businesses that cater to medical marijuana patients. Legislators say it is just the first step in the process and will most likely be changed many times before it becomes a law. Representative Diane Sands, a Democrat from Missoula and chair of the Children, Families, Health, and Human Services Interim Committee, claims that the bill is not going to make everyone happy and that no one is suggesting that this will be the final version of the bill. Representative Sands also said the panel's work is not an effort to prevent anyone with a, quote, legitimate health issue, end quote, from getting medical marijuana, but rather to stop what most members see as abuses of the system by people who aren't really sick. The bipartisan panel voted 7-1 to have the bill drafted and prepared for introduction at the 2011 legislature, which convenes in January. The one committee member voting against the proposal was Representative Mary Cafaro, Democrat of Helena, who indicated she thought it contained too many restrictions on legal recipients of medical marijuana. The panel has been working for months on a rewrite of Montana's current medical marijuana law, citing the dramatic growth of the program. Montana's voters approved the medicinal marijuana law by initiative back in 2004. The last year has seen a rise from fewer than 4,000 medical marijuana patients a year ago to the current number of 22,700 in the program. The bill endorsed by the committee on Tuesday will close what committee members see as a loophole in the system and require any medical marijuana users to be full-time Montana residents. It will tighten the qualifications to get a marijuana card as a treatment for chronic pain, allow cities and counties to use zoning or other laws to restrict, but ultimately not prohibit, any medical marijuana business. The provision most objected to by speakers at Tuesday's meeting was the new requirement that patients who need the drug for pain must now get a recommendation from two separate doctors instead of one, and a proposed limit of only 2 ounces per month, severely limiting those that ingest, as opposed to smoking, medical marijuana. Yeah, once again, the fact that you make marijuana legal for people to use for medical purposes turns out to be popular is something you see as abuse, right? In any other situation, if we had come up with some miracle drug that alleviated headaches, allowed you to go to sleep, cured nausea, kept you from wasting away, helped with anxiety, paranoia, stopped chronic pain. If we found this miracle drug, we would be trumpeting 22,000 people getting on it. We would be clamoring to have more and more and more people on this drug. But because it's marijuana, oh my God, it must be abuse. People who are not really sick, people that are in pain now, have to spend the money on two doctor's appointments to get someone to believe that they're not just lying to get high. And even if they were, what kind of abuse is that? What kind of abuse is it when you have someone who would have been smoking pot illegally, that you don't know where they're at, you don't know what they're doing, you don't know where they're growing it. Someone who would have been smoking pot illegally now goes, spends money at a doctor, creating a job for the doctor and for many other people working in the clinic, goes to the state and pays a fee, generating money for the state, and goes to a marijuana business, a dispensary, spending money there, generating sales taxes, generating more jobs. And now you know the guy's name, you know where he lives, and he's told you where he's going to grow marijuana. How anyone can see that as abuse just blows my mind.
Break time.
Break time. I need a break. My voice is going out on
you. Your voice is going out on you.
It's all Carrie's fault. We're going to blame Carrie. Carrie, we're sorry we missed you, darling. We'll get you back next time, I swear. We'll be right back after this.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would sell you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Normal National Conference 2010, September 9th through the 11th, in beautiful Portland, Oregon. Portland? Is this a typo? Oh, I get it. For more details, see norml.org/conference. Normal Show Live Chat is only for registered Stickum members who've sent us a friend request. Chat is a privilege, and those who abuse it will be removed. For a list of unacceptable behavior in chat, send a private message to any moderator.
Cool out. Cool out. Cool out. And always smoke the best. Cool out.
It's time for your daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420 friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Today we bring you tunes for Groovin' Thursday, our salute to all the dopest beats and killer rhymes that we find in the best of rap, hip hop, soul, R&B, and funk. Brought to you by the John Doe Radio Show in Denver, Colorado. Accurate and informative marijuana reform news and entertainment. Available on the THC Media Network and JohnDoeRadio.com. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now here's some more great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes.
John Doe Radio.
John Doe here with your Groovin' Thursday tune on Normal Show Live. The Literates are a hip-hop group from Los Angeles, California. They're known for hard beats, raw lyrics, and a live show guaranteed to have anyone leaving the venue wanting more. They have performed with acts such as Cypress Hill, KRS-One, who I got to see in Denver at a very intimate live setting with Bobby Black from High Times, and Adam Dunn from THC was there. Derek, co-host of the show, was there. It was a great time. The Literates have also played with Shapeshifters, The Germs, and countless others. They've acquired a large selection of listeners ranging from your average B-boy and girl to punk and rock and metal fans. They've also gained support of numerous hip-hop radio shows throughout the country, and in doing so, it has been part of their plan to learn about and utilize all available resources to gain exposure as they remind the forgetful of what hip-hop should be. Positive, inspiring, and creative. With nothing but high expectations of success and great music and lyrics to guide them, the sky is the limit. This tune features Sendog of Cypress Hill. It is The Literates, City of Angels. I am John Doe. Big thanks to Normal Show Live. Until we meet again, see you, Stashers.
Another Anti-Ill Productions. West Side Strong coming at you, baby. This is how we do it. Kick this out, homie. Sleep. We about to creep. Go take over the whole thing.
I should have been born with a blunt attached to my mouth, just off the
110 South, City of Green, hit the cream and be out. Pops taught me how to hustle, told me Tommy, never open your mouth. So unspoken's what the list is about. Backpack zipped, equipped, 12 ounces of soul. Crack back a quick fit, find a Red Bull. Only rolling with a click tight clan. It's either me and my man or 30 other brothers repping a band. Cali never was the type to pretend. I'll tell you straight to your face that you ain't shit, then I'll spit in your hand. Have you exit in a corner with his fans? Don't ever step to me, homie, if you ain't ready to war with the veteran. Been in it for years, spitting on the grind for a minute. On a chase for the papes, waiting on the day I'ma get it. See me on top, lavish with the life that I'm living. Never giving a second thought, so I took it and stayed tripping. City of angels,
city of dreams,
but everything in the west
ain't always what it seems.
Gotta hustle for the cream,
only roll with a strong team.
About to dominate the scene,
never sleep like crack fiends.
City of angels,
city of dreams,
but everything in the west
ain't always what it seems.
Gotta hustle for the cream,
only roll with a strong team.
About to dominate the scene,
never sleep like crack fiends.
I hail from the city of Southgate. Everybody stay heated, therefore a high crime rate. Never hesitate when opportunity's given. I'm like Doc Holliday, and that's how I'm living. Third eye open at all times when I swerve. Keep a jam concealed just in case I gotta serve. Mad Dog, don't take anybody lightly. We can bust rhymes and put them down if you wanna fight me. Really, I just stay focused on the papers. Pockets on full, pulling off musical papers. Out here, anything can bring you down. 8 million ways to die in a crazy town. Keep my circle small, just a chosen few. Fools with a lot of heart and paid a lot of dues. Check me on the album, honorary literate. Too damn hot, put your ass out like a cigarette.
City of angels,
city of dreams,
but everything in the west
ain't always what it seems.
Gotta hustle for the cream,
only roll with a strong team.
About to dominate the scene,
never sleep like crack beans.
City of angels,
city of dreams,
but everything in the west
ain't always what it seems.
Gotta hustle for the cream,
only roll with a strong team.
About to dominate the scene,
never sleep like crack beans.
Home of the scandalous, big bad Los Angeles.
LA is dangerous, walk around with an alias. It's my world, you're an alien invading it. It's unbelievable, like gods to an atheist. Bombing everything within an 80-mile radius. Snatch tourists by the tongue, leave them tasteless. You gotta love it, like Satan loves hatred. Remain sacred, murderous when we laced it. Anti-drop the track, so visual.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish Designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527.
Remember, friends, there's more to life than marijuana. I just can't remember what it is. Why'd I come in here?
One of the most disturbing elements of the war on marijuana is how it has made police the enemy of otherwise law-abiding cannabis consumers. Fortunately, one group of police officers knows firsthand the futility of the drug war and reaches out to the community and to current law enforcement to end our war on drugs through legalization. It's time now to speak to one such officer in our continuing look at law enforcement against prohibition.
All right, everyone, welcome back. It's 28 after the hour, and joining us now by telephone, we are speaking with Mackenzie Allen, a speaker for Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, and a retired King County, Washington deputy sheriff. Mackenzie, welcome to the show.
Hi, Russ. Thanks so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
I'm glad to have you here, and I was looking through your bio, and it also said that you had done commercial and soap opera work.
In another incarnation of my life, yeah.
Glad to hear it. I love getting diversity out of our guests. That's wonderful. All right. So as I was also reading your bio, you know, it says at the top that you're a retired deputy sheriff from King County, Washington. But what really caught my eye is your experience in South Central L.A. Tell folks what you were involved with in South Central.
I started my career in law enforcement with the L.A. Sheriff's Department. In L.A., as it is in some counties, the county sheriff is also the jailer. So all new deputies do a stint working in the, what they call the custody division in jails, which, as some people may know, it's really rife with crime, a lot of it drug-oriented, in the jails. Subsequent to that, I went out to patrol, and my last assignment was working down near Watson in a town called Linwood. It was It was East Compton, Willowbrook, and it was basically on the border of Watts. So it's a real rough and tumble neighborhood. Much of the crime is, as we all know, oriented around the drug black market.
Yeah, and you were down there, right, working on the streets. It says that you would refuse or not pursue promotions because you liked working on the streets. As you met the people who were caught up in these arrests day after day after day, what effect did you see it having on their lives and their communities?
You know, it's a very complicated and complex question, Russ. I'm going to try to give you as succinct an answer as possible. First of all, it's multifaceted. For the most part, and I want to preface this by a little bit of a disclaimer. I, not as someone who is a member of LEAP, nor as a private person, nor as a law enforcement officer, retired or otherwise, am promoting or in any way condoning the use of, or certainly the abuse of drugs. I mean, alcohol is a drug. My drug of choice is a martini in the evening before dinner. But I want it very clear that that's not the purpose of this. The purpose of my participating in this is to discuss the total futility and the destruction to society, which speaks to your question, of our, quote, war on drugs. First of all, we have all these people, and I used to arrest them over and over again in South Central L.A. and up here in Washington, who are running around with, you know, marijuana cigarettes, a fraction of a rock of cocaine, a $20 paper of heroin. We're locking them up. We're stuffing the jails, overcrowding the jails with these nonviolent people, and we don't have the hard cells to lock down the really violent offenders. That's the primary thing. I'm going to shut up here for a second and let you get a word in because I know we have a time lag.
Oh no, that's excellent. That's something that we see all the time too. Is this the futility of it all? You know, you arrest two or three low level street dealers, and the next thing you know, there's three or four or five to take their place. It really seems to not make much traction. As you were involved in this and working with the people down there on the streets, as you look back, do you feel any regret over having to, you know, enforce that law?
No, and very clearly no. And here's the reason. As a sworn law enforcement officer, I was a sheriff's deputy, but, you know, there are any number of different types of law enforcement officers. You're sworn to uphold the law. You do not get to pick and choose which ones you want to enforce. Now, having said that, in a realistic sense, you do as kind of as a free agent, as it were, if you're not responding to call for service, if you're out patrolling and doing proactive work. And I also work undercover as what we call the proactive unit, as a street crimes unit. You do get to select where your focus is, again, if you're not being sent on a 911 call. I don't regret it, though, because that's part and parcel of law enforcement. What we need to do is change this country's attitude in our pursuit of the drug problem. It is, in my opinion, it is a health problem. It's an education problem, clearly. I guess my question, my all-encompassing question would be, is if you've done something for 40 years, if you've pursued a policy for 40 years and thrown $1 trillion+ at it, and you have a bunch of dead bodies laying around behind it, and nothing is getting better but clearly getting worse, at what point do you take a breath and stop and reexamine the policy?
Yeah, it's a good point, but I'd also point out that the drug war can't continue without the frontline soldiers, the police that are arresting the people, and sometimes it sounds to me a bit like the Nuremberg defense. I was just following orders. We had to arrest them. If a bunch of frontline police officers, the people who are dealing with the people who realize it's most futile, stood up, and I guess that's what LEAP is doing, right? Standing up to say this is futile, it would make an enormous change in this drug war.
Well, I think, yes, I agree with you, and I think you just answered your own question. That is, and I don't want to say that I'm speaking for LEAP as an organization. I am a member, but I don't believe I'm misrepresenting to agree with that exact premise. Here is a group of retired and current people involved in the law enforcement or the criminal justice system, I should say, not just law enforcers, judges, prosecutors, corrections people, who have come to the realization whether a revelation overnight or because of an arrest or a specific incident or just years of going through the same cliche revolving door, that this doesn't work, it's time to change. But in all honesty, I don't think it's realistic to expect a line officer who sees a drug transaction taking place in front of him or her to drive down the street and ignore it because he doesn't agree with the philosophy. You also have to understand that we're sworn to protect and serve. I know that sounds cliche, but it's really true. It's based on what we do. The citizens who live in a neighborhood or the residents of a neighborhood, if you're living next door to a crack house and there's traffic in and out all hours of the day or night, that is a dramatic destruction of your quality of life. I would not expect a local cop to ignore that.
Okay. So with respect to your cohorts in law enforcement, the rank and file officers that are working today, do they feel a lot the same way you do, or do they put much thought into what's going on? Are a lot of them just doing their jobs and going through the motions, or is there a lot of thought on the front lines of police work that this desperately needs to change?
You know, I wish I could give you a complete and honest answer to that. I have to beg off a little bit in that I've been retired for several years.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I do not maintain a coterie of friends who are cops. We have all kinds of friends in all different professions, and my wife and I have never focused on, or we've never been just part of a close-knit police social life. In fact, I always told trainees, I was a training officer for many years, we always advise them, and my wife teaches a class for the families of police officers, get other friends outside the law enforcement world, otherwise you're going to have a very narrow focus. But I think you'll find the entire gamut of attitudes. We used to have an expression, and I'm sure it still exists, that every time you come up against miscreants that you're arresting, the glib answer was that it's job security. Well, you know, I would have always been happy to do something else for a living if somehow we could get rid of crime. So that to me is just kind of a flip answer. Although I think there are a lot of cops who just feel that way. They go out and they do their job. We used to say hook 'em and book 'em, and they really don't think beyond that. But I think the more thoughtful of us start to, you can't help but take a step back and say, well, this clearly is not working. Is this the best application of our resources? And clearly it's not.
All right. We're speaking with Mackenzie Allen, a former South Central L.A. undercover detective and a King County, Washington deputy with law enforcement against prohibition. And looking at the idea of discretion. You know, I saw this amazing graph. It came out, I believe, from Drug Policy Alliance with respect to California, showing how every single category of crime, every single one, had been reduced over the past, I forget how long the time period was, a couple decades, I suppose, had gone down in double-digit or even triple-digit percentages, except marijuana law enforcement, which had gone up by like 169%, something like that, the arrest numbers. And they point to this as being evidence of the funding for prosecuting marijuana that local enforcement gets from federal government, the burn grants and the drug war grants, and the civil asset forfeiture of capturing drug users' cars and property and such. Do you feel that there is a profit motive for police in arresting and locking up cannabis consumers?
I don't think it's any more specifically aimed at marijuana users than any other drug users or dealers. The seizure laws have long been a tool and a resource and a source of funding for law enforcement agencies. In my last department, King County Sheriff's, every department really basically has at least one, depending on the size of the agency, dedicated detective who is very skilled and educated and astute when it comes to the seizure laws. That's their full-time job. They're almost like accountants. They're almost like actuaries. They just figure out what the department will glean from it. So I have no specific knowledge to agree with the fact that cannabis is being singled out. In my experience, a property seizure and forfeiture was just the result of a drug bust. The drug itself didn't really matter.
Okay. With respect to these other crimes, mayhem, rape, murder, robbery, assault, you know, violent crimes, things that everyone would agree are crimes against people or property, when we see all those stats going down, even as populations go up, is violent crime, is crime in general going down, or are we just arresting less of those people in favor of arresting drug users?
You know something? I don't know a single cop. I have never met a single cop who would bypass or ignore the potential arrest of a violent offender in favor of arresting a drug possessor. So I'm not going to be able to support that line of thinking. Any cop who would do that is not worthy of the name and has no business in the profession.
You know, I agree with you on that.
I agree with you on that,
Mackenzie. And, you know, I think it was purposeful. I mean, if there's on one street corner the guy dealing a crack rock and on the other street corner a woman getting beaten up and raped, I completely agree with you. The cop's going to go take care of the violent crime. My point is that in focusing so much investigatory time on the drug crimes, it takes away the possibility that driving the next block down the street, they would have caught the rapist.
You know, I have to tell you, in the real world of patrol work, what we call random patrol or reactive patrol, of course, because you're reacting to calls for service, the 911 generated call.
Mm-hmm.
But in random patrol work, where you're just, the cop is out on the street patrolling his or her neighborhood, the likelihood of coming across, stumbling upon an observation type arrest by just driving around, a violent arrest, is like getting hit by lightning.
Okay.
It just doesn't happen. And so what? And because there are so many drug offenses going on at a low level, almost by sheer number, that's what you run into more commonly.
I get
but
you.
But what I think you're not addressing, or at least haven't as yet, in regard to violent crime, is the problem of the massive increase in violent crime among the market practitioners. I mean,
Absolutely.
Look at Mexico.
Oh, yeah.
Look at Mexico. You have there's a country that is literally under siege. It's almost a civil war.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I look at that all the time, Mackenzie, and you're right.
That's a function of nothing but a black market and drugs.
You're absolutely right, and I completely agree with that, and I'm not trying to, like, corner you into an awkward situation here. I'm just trying to point out some of the things that people have brought up on this. We have time for probably one more question here. Let me get this one in. I totally agree with you on the, you know, driving around randomly, you're not likely to see a rape going on. Absolutely. But what police do have to deal with a lot are domestic disputes, domestic violence, and we've seen a lot of those caused by alcohol, but they can also be caused by other drugs as well, not likely cannabis, but other drugs as well.
Right, I agree with that entirely. I have never, I'm going to tell you something, I don't even know how many thousands of arrests I've made in my career. To my knowledge, I have never arrested a belligerent or violent pot smoker.
Yeah, it just doesn't happen. Well, I guess what I'm...
It's not the nature of it. It's just not the nature of it, General.
That's right. There's even studies to back that up. But I guess what I'm getting at, though, is in the situation where drugs are illegal, I've often theorized that it leads to more crime in the sense that people who would have normally called 911 to get the cops out to stop something bad going on are reluctant to do so when they know the cops are going to find their stash of weed or their plant growing in their closet.
Oh, yeah. You're unequivocally right. Absolutely correct.
Yeah.
Absolutely correct. And so in that sense, the illegality of it can, in fact, negatively impact a victim or victims. Because of the reluctance to call 911. Yeah, that's absolutely right. Could I give you a percentage or a frequency with which that occurs? No, certainly not statistically. But, yeah, I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah, it'd be kind of hard to measure. How many times did you not call the cops? Every day I didn't call the cops, I guess. Okay.
Right.
Well, Mackenzie Allen, a former South Central L.A. undercover narcotics detective, also a retired King County.
Well, let me clear up.
Yes.
I worked undercover in King County, not in L.A.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Okay. King County.
No, that's okay. I just don't want to misrepresent.
Good point. And worked in King County, Washington. That's the Seattle area, right?
Yes, it is. King County is the county in which Seattle is situated.
What were the differences for you between working in L.A. with its drugs and drug crimes that you were prosecuting versus Seattle?
Just the volume and the price. When I first got up here from L.A. in '89, the very first thing I said to the guys I was working with, I said, "What are you folks doing about your gang problem?" And they looked at me and said, "What gang problem? This is the Pacific Northwest. We don't have a gang problem." So I laughed, and I said, yeah, you do. One kid I knew from L.A. said to me, Deputy Allen, what are you doing up here? I said, well, what are you doing up here? He says, I can get three times the money from my coke up here.
Oh, okay.
But that's all kind of equaled out now. That's a long time ago, and it's all equaled out. But, yeah, the dope everywhere is cheaper and more readily accessible, and I don't know there's a whole lot of difference. Probably a higher level of violence down there than here still, even though we have a fair number of shootings up here, but it's probably still more violent down there.
Well, Mackenzie Allen, I thank you for standing up as a former law enforcer to, you know, point out how absurd and counterproductive these laws are. Thank you for speaking up for LEAP, and come back again sometime. We'd love to have you here. Thank you.
Thanks. It'd be my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me, Russ.
All right. 45 after the hour. When we come back, we'll do some radical ranting. We're going to plumb the wisdom of our commenters on Prop 19. It's Normal Show Live. We're back after this.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation. Legalize marijuana? Prove it. Join Normal today at NORML.org, and your donation will help us spread the growing truth about cannabis. Free speech ain't free, you know.
Free the ganja tree, it's the healing of the nation. Free the Cali weed, good for meditation. Free the pot smokers, they're in a delight. Lighting up the chalice, they keep no malice.
The heal of marijuana.
Hey, this is Willie Nelson for Normal. And I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer than alcohol, and I quit drinking years ago. But until now, we all run the risk of arrest if we're caught with marijuana. Fortunately, that's about to change. The voters in California this November will have the opportunity to approve a proposal to legalize, regulate, and tax the responsible use of marijuana by adults. The nation's most populous state may soon be the first to reject prohibition, and other states are sure to follow. To learn how you can help, please contact Normal at NORML.org or call toll-free 888-67-NORMAL.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
And you have offended Shaolin Temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious, and don't call me Shirley.
Hoo-ah! Radical rant.
Hey everybody, welcome back. 47 after the hour here at Hour 1 of Normal Show Live. Remember, stay tuned for Hour 2, available only on the live stream. Hour 2, we'll be talking more about Prop 19. We've got some more incredible insanity out here in the Pacific Northwest, and your calls at 971-533-7111. And before I get into rant mode, I've got to bring Carrie back up on the line. She's waiting there on Skype. Carrie, can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine. Can you hear me?
Yes. I have to apologize to you on the air because it was me who committed the major fail. I had the volume turned down on the Skype software.
And Carrie told me
it
that
happened.
She told me she said she was experimenting with the sound. I said, "You're experimenting went all wrong." She goes, "All I did was put up blankets."
How could that have caused?
And by the way, Carrie, it does sound a little better in there. Actually.
Yeah,
I can
tell.
Blankets
help.
Huge difference.
Very nice.
So I apologize.
That's great.
That was on me. My bad. I failed. All right. So
you actually did pretty good, Russ. I have to give you props. You when there's no material, you seem to just create it out of air, and it always sounds great. So.
Thank you, Toke
thanks
of the Town.
Thanks for doing the show.
Yeah, thanks to Toke of the Town for that and the fact that I am full of it. And whenever we don't have it written down, I can just spew it.
Spew it.
So I think that's a compliment. All right. I wanted to go back to one of my posts in the Stash blog, stash.normal.org. It's my Prop 19 word-for-word analysis. This has been cited and quoted and linked to all over the internet, and I couldn't be more proud. I'm a little shocked, actually, because I don't want I don't know if people know this, but I don't have a college degree. It's not like I'm a lawyer or anything, man. I'm just a guy who can read.
Yeah, me too.
So I just put my opinions out there, but I'm glad a lot of people are taking them seriously. I did want to get to some of the commenters just to get the feel for what people out there reading the blog seem to think about Prop 19. And there's some really good stuff here. BW says that Prop 19 is how we get our foot in the door. People who complain that it limits this or that are ignorant. It's better than what we have legally now. Right now, I'm waiting to be caught and sent to prison because the police smelled marijuana and kicked in my locked bedroom door. If you vote yes on Prop 19, you can deter such volatile, heinous police activity. You can return some of our civil rights and personal privacy. I think it's a really, really good point on that gentleman's part. Or it could be a lady, BW, I don't know. Could be Barbara. Who knows?
That was an excellent comment. Yeah. So, you know, sometimes we get a little bit of crazy in our comments, but there's nuggets of awesomeness.
Nuggets of awesomeness. Yeah. Mr. Mark had commented, one point I don't get is the over-announced go-to-jail part. And he's referring to, like, there's some people who are against Prop 19 because they say, well, you can only carry an ounce. You can only have an ounce. And you can only have an ounce. Like, you can have zero now, but somehow only an ounce is just not enough. And so he continues, Mr. Mrack, not Mark, Mrack. Mr. Mrack.
I think that's Mr. AK.
Could be.
Yeah. Ace King suited.
There we go. Okay. It's a Texas Hold'em thing. Okay. Yeah. But he continues by saying, why I, you, or anyone else would have more than an ounce when it's legal? People only buy that much because it's illegal, and it might be some time before you can get some more. That, and prices go down more if you buy more at once. Right? You buy the QP, it's cheaper than buying the ounce. You buy the pound, it's cheaper than the QP, right? And you buy that much because, well, I don't know when the next time I'm going to find my weed guy, right?
Exactly.
I don't know when the next harvest is coming. So you buy a whole lot to stock up, right? So he continues, he says, however, if you get it cheaper at the store, and if you run out, you can go get more at the store. Why, oh, why do you need more than an ounce ever?
Just go buy your pack, honestly.
You know, this, of course, in respect to recreational use of cannabis. There are medical users that do use a lot of marijuana because they're cooking it or they're making tinctures out of it. But even then, if you could go buy an ounce every day,
yeah,
you know, you'd probably have plenty of medicine for cooking.
And honestly, if I could buy an ounce just to put in my one batch of brownies, I don't know about you, Russ. I never put an ounce in brownies.
Yeah, that's a lot of.
That's a lot to put in brownies.
Yeah. Now, I did have some folks that were against my writings for Prop 19 and actually posted comments. And that's cool because if you disagree with me, please disagree with me. Come out and bring it. You know, don't call me names. Don't curse and all filth.
Yeah, we love a intelligent debate.
But we'll talk about it. Yeah. So I'm going to cover some of these people that had some problems. Cannabis Cat asked, I have been one of the biggest proponents of this campaign, but I have to say that it's not too late nor too stupid to put the brakes on, take a really good look at this verbiage. I'm beginning to think that this is all just absolutely ridiculously backward. What would happen if we spent this much time and energy reclassifying this plant and getting it out of Schedule 1, solving the problems across the board without creating any shady and limited laws? What then? Now, this gets to one of the points that these people that come up with this notion that if it's either Prop 19 or something else, right? There's no reason we can't vote on Prop 19 now, and then in 2012, go for the next initiative. It's like they got this feeling like, oh my God, if we pass Prop 19 now, it's really going to suck, and we'll never be able to change it. Well, no. If it really sucks, if it really does turn out to suck, doesn't that get more people interested in coming out for 2012 to make it better?
And even if it does suck, it's hell of a lot better than what we have now.
Yeah. Well, again, then you got those Prop 215 people say, no, it's not better than Prop 215. But Prop 215 is not going anywhere. So you're going to be fine, too, okay? Mm-hmm. How about thinking about the 80% of us that still go to jail, still get arrested, still get criminal records because we just happen to be too healthy? How about that?
And think about your tourists that are going to come to your state and use your marijuana. You know, the money that's going to go into your communities. I mean, people don't they don't look at the big picture, I don't think.
Yeah. So one of my detractors, Johnny S., wrote in and said, I've read many of your points and don't understand why you make caricatures of people now who grow under the system of Prop 215 as I gots mine greedy people. Well, I don't make the caricature based on greed. I make it based on selfishness, that you got your freedom, you got your legality, and now you're not wanting to give it to me. If I'm going to be here ranting and raving and cursing out, well, not cursing out, but, you know, calling out these opponents of legalization from the prohibition side, you know, cops and lawmakers and actors and whoever else speaks up against it, I have to maintain the same tone with people on our side who are against legalization. And that's what this is. Prop 19 is legalization. There seem to be people out there that have this notion that there's only two models. Either pot is completely illegal, or pot is as legal as dandelions. Right? Because I read this comment over and over on blogs. They say, it's not real legalization. Not real legalization, because it doesn't let you grow a billion plants, and it doesn't let you hold a billion pounds, and it doesn't let you sell to anybody with no taxes, no regulations, no nothing, because it's not completely free. Our only two choices are completely illegal, completely free.
And it doesn't let me smoke with kids.
It doesn't let me smoke in front of kids, yeah. That's the other complaint we get. Look, there's lots of steps in legalization. Aspirin is a legal drug. Morphine is a legal drug. But there's a whole breadth of regulations between the two extremes of morphine and aspirin, right? There's a whole bunch of different... Even within the legal drugs, when we look at beer from state to state, and even from county to county in some states, some places beer is illegal. Some places you can buy 3-2 beer. Some places you can buy beer up to 5% alcohol. Some places won't let you sell liquor in the same store as, you know, like the grocery store. You have to go to a special state-run store for that. Some places will let you sell Everclear. Some places won't. Some places have limits on to how high the proof will be. Some places don't. Some places like Utah, you have to join a private club to get your liquor, right? But it's all legal, except for those dry counties, right? It's all legal. There's a big breadth of legality that we have to choose from here, and Prop 19 is within that spectrum. It makes marijuana legal. Not as much as maybe some would like. Not as much cultivation as some would like. Maybe not as much commercialization as some would like. But you cannot say that Prop 19 is not legalization. Now, in responding to Johnny S., I pointed some things out, you know, because he was worried about things. He says, let's see if I can get to this where I have it quoted. He says, first of all, he says that all the marijuana crimes that you could be arrested for will still be crimes, except for having a 5x5 grow space. Well, kind of reminds me of that scene in Monty Python, Life of Brian, where he says, well, yeah, except for the aqueducts and the teachers and the roads and literacy and medicine, what have the Romans ever done for us? Right? Other than not being busted for growing a 5x5 garden, all the marijuana crimes you can be arrested for now will still be crimes. The problem he's got here is he's confusing arrested for with criminal. Right. What they're trying to say here is they're saying, hey, if you have less than an ounce in California, it's only a ticket anyway, man. If you have more than an ounce, you're going to go to jail. After Prop 19, you can still have your ounce. But if you have more than that, you're still going to go to jail. Well, first of all, for the people that have more than an ounce and are already going to go to jail now, who would go to jail then, it's a wash, right? There's no difference. They were already going to jail. For the people less than an ounce, they'll now be able to legally possess it. Legally possess. And arrested for is not the same as not criminal. In fact, I've got a problem with how in drug law reform we refer to California as a decriminalized state, because in my opinion, it's not. It's a non-arrestable state. It's the only misdemeanor in California for which you cannot be arrested, but you still get a misdemeanor. You still get a criminal record. Therefore, it's still a crime. You know what things won't be crimes after Prop 19? Possessing an ounce of weed, you will not get a criminal record. Growing a 25-square-foot garden will not give you a criminal record. Possessing everything you harvested from the 25-square-foot garden will not be a crime. This is one that they always overlook. Prop 19 allows you to harvest your 5x5 garden and keep all of the harvest at the garden, however much that is. 6 pounds? Is that what you harvested? You can keep that at your garden. You can take an ounce of it with you when you want to go somewhere else. You come back, you've wasted that ounce, you can come back to your 6 pounds or your 5 pounds, 15 ounces and grab another ounce and leave the house, right? But you can have that 6 pounds at your house or whatever it turns out to be. And opening a store to buy and sell weed in some cities will not be a crime. In addition to things that won't be a crime after Prop 19, there's all sorts of tools law enforcement has to harass cannabis consumers that will no longer exist. The smell of pot will no longer be probable cause to harass you. the sight of pot. Leaves, stems, seeds, baggies, lights, scales. None of that will be probable cause to harass you. And the drug testing part. Companies will be unable to discriminate against you in getting a job simply because your pee turns up hot for marijuana use. So get behind Prop 19, Johnny S., and everybody out there. Check out the blog, stash.normal.org. The post is Prop 19, a word-for-word analysis. Stay tuned for Hour 2. We'll talk more about it. And for those of you on the podcast, for Ganja John, Cannabis Carry, I'm Radical Russ. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
And don't forget, tomorrow, Cultivator's Corner with Danny Danko from High Times Magazine, answering your live questions from chat and in the live call-in segment. Danny Danko from High Times tomorrow. Check it out on Normal Show Live.
You're it, you're growing, you're trying to ruin it, you're smoking, and it goes down smooth.